You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same. It's 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream, on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, jam-packed show today. Mm-hmm. Jim Santel, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review, which you can catch every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 across the network. He is a former U.S. attorney, mm-hmm. and acting attorney now, and lots of things to break down, including this ongoing dispute between the Trump administration and even the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
As far as Mr. Abrego Garcia is concerned, the man who was erroneously deported to El Salvador.
Yes.
So that's coming up with Jim Santel. A number of other things we're going to talk about with him. In hour number two, State Representative Lee Snodgrass will be here to talk about a new measure that she is supporting. We'll have a little weather and wine with Brittany Merlot. It is really beautiful out right now in Racine.
Give it time.
I know. It'll change.
Yeah.
It's Wisconsin. It's whiplash weather. So we'll have Brittany here next hour around 10:21. He joins us every other Thursday for all things sports. The Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan will be here. Of course, the NFL draft getting underway today in Green Bay. I hope everybody's got a brelly.
Is that some sort of British?
It's an umbrella.
Get yourself a brelly.
Get a brelly. A bumper shoot, actually.
A bumper shoot, yes.
A bumper shoot, if we were really going to be English. But yeah, if you're going to be going up to Green Bay for the draft today, just keep an umbrella and maybe a rain slicker or,
Some wellies.
A garbage bag always works in a pinch.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to, we've got rain coming in, so be aware of that. And then we will wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Rock the Boat edition.
Yeah.
Part four.
I think so, yeah.
Three or four.
We are great journalists.
Yes, we're right on documenting everything that we do. So that is all on the way. I did want to start off with this just because I shouldn't be surprised, and yet I am.
Yeah.
This goes back to help for me, but not for thee. Mm-hmm. Tom Cotton, senator from Arkansas. Headline says, reconsider. Tom Cotton begs Trump for disaster relief after opposing it for Democratic states. No.
What?
Senator Tom Cotton pleading with President Trump to reconsider his denial of disaster relief after a series of tornadoes hit Arkansas. Tom Cotton, who has opposed similar aid for blue states. Yes. Numerous times.
Oh, yeah.
Joined an Arkansas delegation in writing to Trump directly to support Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' request for money to help them out. They were denied.
Yep.
But now they're not going to let this go yet. They're going to follow this up. And I'm pretty sure that eventually Trump will cave and he'll give them the money.
Well, as long as they give him something, whether it's copious amounts of praise or money.
Copious amounts of cash. That works, too. On a Friday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders appealed the federal government's denial for aid in Arkansas, telling Trump that her state is in dire need of federal assistance. Unfortunately, the government says, based on our review of information available, it's been determined the damage from this event was not of such severity and magnitude as to be beyond the capabilities of the state, affected local governments, and voluntary agencies. Before Trump was elected the second time, mm-hmm. we talked about Project 2025, which includes not only getting rid of NOAA, but essentially getting rid of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Disaster Group, which gives communities help after major disasters like tornadoes and floods and fires and all of these things. And Donald Trump, I believe himself, had said they should be able to take care of it themselves. States should be able to just do the thing. You know, I'm sorry, but don't look to us, the federal government, to give you a handout.
That's just another reason why how he does not understand how government actually works. All of these states pay into a coffer, and that coffer is used for various national distribution of monies. And one of those things is disaster aid. And when it was the California wildfires, we'll give you aid, but we have a few demands first.
In exchange.
Yes.
We'll give you the money, but.
But he's just straight up saying no to our, well, I shouldn't say he's saying it. His administration is saying no, but it's kind of comforting, Jane, that at least he's staying consistent on his lack of wanting to help any Americans in times of need.
As of today.
I mean, I'm sure they'll come back with some gold coins or a good compliment.
Maybe he'll just tell them to buy some of his crypto coins.
Ooh, maybe they'll offer to build him a golf course in Arkansas for free.
And if you put his name on it.
His face is on every flag of every hole.
Then he might give you some disaster money. Yes, Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas now saying, please, Mr. President, I know you deny aid to everybody else, but we really deserve the help.
Yeah, I know I said no to everybody else. I think his quote was, Arkansas shouldn't have to pay for help to the Northeast.
Yes, exactly. When after Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah. Oh, Hurricane Sandy. You know, that little windstorm.
He didn't think that Arkansas needed to bail out the Northeast. Why is it our responsibility to help other Americans?
Do you know? I know that when Jesus is walking the plains and landscapes of Galilee and Jerusalem, he always, when someone asks to heal him, he's like, "Why is that my problem?"
Go back to your town.
How is your blindness my problem, huh?
According to the Arkansas Times, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders specifically requested help in the form of small business loans and individual assistance for people in Greene, Hot Springs, Independence, and a number of other counties in Arkansas. But the Trump administration so far has declined to declare it a disaster. The administration has already begun making major cuts at FEMA. Again, they say that these fatal storms, a number of people were killed in these tornadoes in Arkansas, were not so severe as to be beyond the capabilities of the state. So handle it yourself, guys. You're on your own.
Handle it yourself. I mean, if you look at a breakdown, I saw a graph that showed the amount of aid that's needed. It's always in red states, far more than blue states. And now these red states, and it's not, I don't think it's because they're red states at all. It's just because geographically, these things happen in those areas. That's why it happened, not because of who they vote for. But we're going to see a lot more of this problem. We're going to see more your Louisiana and your Alabama and your Mississippi saying, hey, we had a flood, we had a fire, we had a hurricane. We need help. No, you should be able to do it yourself. No, they can't.
Western North Carolina is still struggling.
Yes. Yes.
And the Biden administration got all kinds of criticism that there wasn't enough help going to Western North Carolina after they had that incredible flooding that blasted that whole area. And they're still trying to recover from that. Yeah. And now, again, we have the Trump administration saying, yeah, well, better figure it out for yourself.
Well, it's the same president who went down to Puerto Rico and threw towels at people. So why am I even shocked at his callous nature of, nah, you're fine. Bootstraps. Pick yourself up.
Come on.
Be a man.
It's the American way.
Yeah.
Liz from Saukville listening on WAUK, sending my thoughts and prayers to Arkansas. Absolutely. I feel terribly for those people.
Yes.
And we're being a little flippant about it, but this is where we are.
And you know what? I'm being flippant towards the hypocrisy of one Tom Cotton, but my heart goes out to Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her state.
And her constituents.
They need help. And that's the money we pay into with our taxes. I'd rather give money to other states to help with that than give it for tanks and war and things of that nature. But we can't tell them what to spend the money on, but help them.
This isn't the first time FEMA, this is from ABC News, has denied state requests recently. Earlier this month, Democratic Governor Bob Ferguson of Washington said FEMA denied his state's application for relief after a bomb cyclone hit his state last November. He said in a statement, this is yet another troubling example of the federal government withholding funding. Washington communities have been waiting for months for the resources they need to recover from last winter's devastating storms. and this decision will only cause further delay. We will appeal. FEMA also denying a request from North Carolina's Democratic Governor Josh Stein to extend 100% federal funding for debris removal related to last fall's devastating Hurricane Helene. And they just got crushed.
Yep. So the word's out, folks. If you live in a county, you live in a state that's hit by natural disaster, something terrible happens to you, a whole lot of thoughts and prayers can be sent your way by the federal government. They'll come in a little envelope. They're really no money because they don't want to help you. And I cannot figure out why, honestly. Like, what does FEMA, like, fine, NOAA pushes the climate agenda, whatever. The Department of Education indoctrinates your kids, another discussion. But what does FEMA do to push the liberal, communist, feminist, arriving in caravans agenda here? That's what I'd like to know. Why are they so dangerously woke?
Just take it from the president himself. In January, he visited parts of North Carolina that were crushed by Hurricane Helene. Quote, says Donald Trump, you want to use your state to fix it and not waste time calling FEMA. And then FEMA gets here and they don't know the area. They've never been to the area. They want to give you rules that you never heard about. They want to bring people that aren't as good as the people you already have. And FEMA has turned out to be a disaster, unquote. I'm not saying FEMA is perfect.
Nothing in the government's perfect.
By any stretch of the imagination. But disbanding FEMA and then throwing it on the states and saying it's all on you does not seem like a good solution.
I'm sure there can be fixes made to any organization within the government. But FEMA is good enough to know that when they get into an area, they're going to coordinate with local leaders and doctors and politicians and whomever to who know the land. And there's people who probably – I'm just going to take a shot here in the dark. Jane, do you think that the FEMA has employees in all the states, or at least in the region, who know the areas?
Or at least they have some subsidiaries.
Exactly.
Or at least they're in contact with the local meteorologists.
Yeah, it's not like they're sitting in Washington going, where's North Carolina? Like, he's painting them to be stupid. And they're not. They know what they're doing. These are experts. And once again, these are people who work for FEMA who want to be of service.
Yes. Brian from Milwaukee texting in, this is America. United we stand, divided we fall. We need to help each other out. I would agree with you.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And
help for me.
But none for, and yep, another one of those, but we voted for you. And I'm not, by the way, not talking about the people. I don't want the people, that's not what I'm talking about the politicians, the ones who put him in his place. People like Tom Cotton, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. We voted for you. We thought you'd help us. I mean, fine, the liberals, don't worry about them. But
well, yeah, forget the blue
states.
But
what about us? Well, now here we are.
We'll see what happens with this. I still think he'll cave.
Oh, absolutely.
And give them money. But, well, I don't know. Maybe not.
And then it's going to be the art of the deal, Jane.
Oh, that's what it is. When we return, Real ID, it's coming.
Yes.
May 7th, my friends. Oh. We're going to talk about getting a Real ID, why you need it. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
What else to do about it? Jason.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855 752 4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, day two of our new lineup here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Pat Kreitlow kicking things off from 6 to 9. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Kreitlow. Powered by Up North News. Matt Nair on air with Greg and Calvin and I from 9 to 11. Tom Hartman takes over from 11 to 2. Then Todd Alba from 2 to 4. Today on Maggie Dawn from 4 to 6. She's going to be joined by Indavar Duffa Gupta to talk about how Donald Trump's immigration policy is affecting people in Wisconsin. So I encourage you to join Maggie today from 4 to 6.
There you go.
Join all of us, Todd, too, from 2 to 4. And Pete Schwabe, 6 to 8 p.m.
I was just going
to
say, and talk about 2 hours of pure audio sorbet.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Tom's got a great show. And Don Rosen, our colleague from across the hall, is going to be on tonight. Don has more stories. He really does.
Don has the most radios. He has, you know, honestly, I take that back. He just has the most stories.
He's got lots of great stories and all the celebrities he's met. And so join Pete Schwabe tonight, too, from 6 to 8 p.m. Wanted to talk about this because I went yesterday to get my real ID.
Was it a real good time?
Well, first of all, I want to say, can we give people at the DMV a break?
Yes.
Everyone was so nice.
Yep.
They genuinely, I'm not making this up.
Yep.
The two people who are the first faces that you see when you come in, the one man took his lunch break before I got up to the counter. He was the nicest human being I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He was so smiley and pleasant and nice, and all, they were just terrific. So let's back off on our DMV people, please.
Yeah.
They always get such a bad rap that it's the most terrible experience on the planet, and I just didn't find it to be that way. But I was surprised because I have a passport.
Yes, you do.
And I have global entry.
Ooh.
And global entry requires that we actually met with the FBI.
Yeah.
And had a little sit down with them, and they took our fingerprints. So they have my fingerprints. They have all those things. Mm-hmm. So I showed up yesterday with my trusty passport and my driver's license. That wasn't enough. I needed one other thing with my name and address on it.
Interesting.
That's what was required.
Because my experience was, and we've talked about this before, because you went years ago to try to get it, and it was such a pain. It was a pain. And
yes,
it was more strict because they wanted a Social Security card with a perforated edge on it, which makes no sense to
I know.
Me. Because nowadays they're not even printing them like that, I'm sure.
I'm sure they're not.
But when I went, just to be clear, I went to the website, which, by the way, I will have, we'll have the story we're talking about, and we will have the Q&A page from the DOT of Wisconsin telling what you need to do. Because you only have 10 business days, as including today.
This starts May 7th.
May 7th. You have 10 days from today to get this ID. Or else, you can't fly on planes.
Well, you can't fly.
And you can't go in federal buildings.
Unless you have a passport.
Unless you have a passport. So, but when I went, I brought my passport, I brought my Social Security card, and I brought my birth certificate and my then current driver's license. And I was just waiting for just to spill up, take it all.
Sure.
And when I got up there, I believe if memory serves correctly, she just pulled my birth certificate.
And that was all she used.
That's all she asked for, required, did it, blah, blah, blah. Here you go. Here's your piece of paper. You'll get your new one in 10 days. That was it. And I was like, that seems, maybe they've, I don't want to say loosened the requirements, but they've made it an easier, smoother process. So, because this has been in place for a long time.
This has been underway for almost 2 years. And well, they kept pushing it back.
It was supposed to be required as of 2020.
Oh my.
And then the pandemic. But they've been talking about the real ID since 2005.
I would highly encourage you to get one.
Yes.
Again, if you fly domestically, you're not going to be able to fly if you do not have a real ID. And what makes it a real ID is this little star in the upper right-hand corner. You can still travel with a passport. But if you don't have a passport, even to get into a federal building, you will need a real ID.
And it is May 10th. That is 10 business.
May 7th.
May 7th. 10 business days from today. I mean, we're going to see probably stories on May 7th and May 8th.
Oh, absolutely.
Just livid people at the airport.
Absolutely.
We're going to say this. I didn't know.
In the FAQ section on its website, Department of Homeland Security says travelers with a real ID compliant license or acceptable alternative starting May 7th will not be permitted through the security checkpoint. If you do not have a real ID compliant license or acceptable alternative, they're not going to let you through security.
Nope. And that's it.
So spread the word. Seriously.
Please, please, for your own convenience at least.
I don't want anybody who wants to go on vacation next month to Florida or wherever, and you get to the airport and you're all packed up and ready to go, and you don't have the real ID or you don't have a passport and you're not going to be able to go.
Yeah.
So make sure you check out the show notes after the show is go to civicmedia.us, click on shows, go to Matt and Air on Air, and then everything will be in the show notes for today.
Yeah, it'll be under Hour 1, and it will take you directly to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and it'll have an FAQ page. There's a whole bunch of other things you can actually have, but they're very specific to certain people. Like, there's tribal IDs,
right?
Things, military IDs, but just get the real ID. Be done with it.
Go get it. Go get it done, and please be nice to the people at the DMV. They really get a bad rep. Jim Santel, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review, will be with us on the other side of the news. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, every Saturday morning across Civic Media from 9 to 11. Jim Santel is here, a former U.S. attorney and also a acting attorney. And that's why we are attorney adjacent, because we have Jim Santel and Maggie Dawn. Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
All those attorney things all the time, right? The country is just swarming with us. Great to be with you once again, Jane, Greg, and Calvin.
We have so much to cover. I'm not even sure where to start, Jim, but I guess we'll start here. This headline from Raw Story, Abrego Garcia's family flees to safe house after being doxxed by the Trump administration. So Abrego Garcia is the man who was living in Maryland legally.
Right.
Living in Maryland. The administration has admitted they made an administrative error and mistakenly sent him to this gulag in El Salvador. And now they're saying, we can't get him back. I don't know.
The El Salvadorian president was like, I can't do that.
Yeah, well, nobody can do that. And apparently the Trump administration took it upon themselves to publish a document that included his wife and their children's address. And now they have had to move.
We look in vain for adjectives that describe this kind of behavior, right? Shocking, stunning, offensive, abusive, and yet none of them comes up to the level to describe what this is. All of what you just described, Greg and Jane, is accurate, which is, again, not only have they publicly, they meaning the government, the White House, this president, this attorney general, have admitted that this was an error, right? We made a mistake.
Yep.
And not only have they done that publicly, but also in court. The Solicitor General of the United States of America told the United States Supreme Court that this attorney who appeared in front of Judge Zinnes in Maryland said, yes, let me correct this. And that's the second point, right? Government does make mistakes. You know, well, I worked for the government for 30 years. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. we like to think that most often we get it right or within the category generally
right-ish.
Of right, but errors are made, right?
Sure, sure.
Anytime you're appearing as an assistant U.S. attorney in front of a federal judge and there is an error, what is the answer? The answer is, Your Honor, I acknowledge that my agency, my client made a mistake. Let me fix this and let me fix this as soon as possible. It didn't happen to me a lot, but literally running down the hallway and saying, get the client on the phone. We need to remedy this. This should have been taken care of a month ago when they first acknowledged, as they continue to do, all but Stephen Miller, who amazingly has said, no, maybe this wasn't a mistake. Wrong, Stephen, once again, should have been taken care of. And now to add injury to all of this, including Jane, as you just said, this notion that there's nothing we can do. He's out of our jurisdiction. An absurd proposition, not only legally, but also morally, humanely. You caused this and you're not now going to remedy it. You're the government of the United States of America. Now we're heaping on top of this not just headline story, but this cataclysmic event for the family that has to move. Why? Because the Trump administration has decided apparently to be affirmatively aggressive when it comes to pushing back on Mr. Abrego Garcia and his family. Let's underscore a notion once again, as you always do, that the family, they are citizens of the United States of America.
Yep.
Shouldn't make any difference, doesn't make any difference for constitutional protections. But to those out there, I suspect your listeners all get this completely. To those out there would say, well, gosh, you know, Mr. Abrego Garcia is not a citizen. It doesn't matter. He gets the protections of our Constitution.
Mm-hmm. He
that
gets due process.
Always been our tradition. And again, fellow citizens now being pursued by this administration. And it is a government that has gone wildly awry. And that, again, an understatement of colossal proportion.
This is a question that it came into my head, and I don't know if there is a legal answer, but with court orders, a Supreme Court decision, and everyone on the side of the law saying his rights were violated and he should be coming home, why was Senator Van Hollen not, when he met Mr. Garcia, why was he not allowed to just say, all right, well, he is coming with me. I'm bringing him back to the United States because I have all of this decision. I have all these decisions that say he's within his rights. He's coming with me, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Greg, I have to tell you, as a practical matter, this kind of harkened back, not exactly, to some situations I had when I was in Iraq. I was a civilian there. Again, this is many, many years ago during the war. But we had these same kinds of situations where we had detainees plainly in prison camps and prisons. And the question was, and sometimes we did, we said, you know what, we just discovered 20 people. We don't know why they're there. And we worked right away, yes, with the army, mm-hmm. with General Petraeus, with others to get them out. These are Iraqi citizens. You do exactly what you just described. Here, my guess about the senator is, and my point was going to be, and still is, if you're the senator and you are shaking hands with this individual, aren't you hugely tempted, putting aside all of the niceties of diplomacy, right. to say, come with me, get on this plane together. What are the El Salvadorian government going to do? Are they going to apprehend a United States senator? Again, my guess is he probably did not have those opportunities. Security is probably that strong. But absolutely, it had to cross their mind. Let us now return this man. We've got an opportunity to do it. Let's do what the government, with a capital G, meaning the executive branch, does not do. And again, we don't know the exact trappings of what was real and what wasn't. But I had the same response, which was, and maybe he did make that request, and for reasons that go well beyond my capacity to understand, it wasn't honored. But you had that opportunity there to bring him home and bring this to resolution, finally, long overdue. Now he may have been transferred to another prison. We don't know. We believe he's still alive. This needs to come to an end. Every American, regardless of what side of the political aisle you're on, needs to look at this and say, my country not only needs to do better, it needs to remedy immediately. Well, it's beyond that already, but immediately now, the mistake that it's made, we are the United States of America. We don't do these kinds of things. And when we make errors, once again, we correct them, we do it promptly. My president needs to get his head around those fundamental concepts.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He's a former U.S. attorney and also the host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network. I highly, highly encourage you to listen. I want to back up just to a couple of things, Jim. You had mentioned the government attorney arguing before a court about this case. He essentially, they removed him.
Yes.
Because he admitted that they made a mistake, and that was enough for the Trump administration to remove him.
Right. And I will tell you, if you look at the brief exchange between Judge Sinis and this attorney, that's the kind of thing you expect a government representative to do. And with due humility, I will say, I'd like to think that's how I behaved when I was in federal court. What you say to the judge's judge, as he did, I don't know. Sometimes you admit the embarrassing things. Yeah. I've tried to get this information from my client. That in itself is stunning.
Seriously.
They're not giving it to me. And the judge then looks at him and says, well, I recognize you're in a tough spot. We need to get to the bottom of this. But he acknowledges, Jane, as you just said, that this was an error. There's no doubt about that, legally and procedurally. And what happens is your deputy attorney general, his name is Todd Blanche. He's responsible for operating the Department of Justice on a day-to-day basis. You may recall Mr. Blanche sat next to Donald Trump in that Manhattan courtroom for a number of weeks
yes.
when he was ultimately convicted. He was his former attorney there. He's now second in command. Mr. Blanche turned around, who was also an alumni, for what it's worth, of Department of Justice, turned around and placed that attorney on administrative leave. And Pam Bondi, the attorney general, then gets on the media, as she does routinely, and says, well, he was not providing appropriate representation for an agency of the government. And for that reason, we should all be outraged about his conduct. That is the attorney's conduct. No, Pam, no attorney general. You've got it just wrong, as does the deputy attorney general. Again, adjectives fail me.
Well, and one more point I want to make. And again, before everybody starts freaking out, and you're on the side of MS-13 gang members. No, my friends, it's about due process.
Yes.
And right. It is written that every person, not citizen, in the United States, correct, Jim? Every person in the United States is entitled to due process. So if they
anybody has any question, exactly. Anybody has a question about that, go online and pull up Antonin Scalia, type in, again, citizenship. You will see him saying both publicly and privately in other settings that, yes, indeed, that's the fundamental notion. He's sitting next to a woman named Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who also
yes.
affirms this, right? And so that is so far beyond dispute now. Secondarily, again, as you just indicated, the process here is everything. As the Fourth Circuit recently said with respect to the other deportees, they may well be. Maybe they're part of this Trendy or Rega gang. And they say, perhaps so, perhaps not. And Shane, that's the point.
Right.
We don't know. We don't know. Get him into a court. If yeah. it turns out that indeed he is affiliated and he's a violent person, let's figure that out. But due process, every single American, every single person who is here gets nothing less than that. He should be afforded that as well.
And the other point that I want to make, the whole government, the whole Trump administration thing is, yep, there's nothing we can do about it. We can't bring him back. That's not our authority. They managed to get Andrew Tate and his scummy brother out of Romania, where they were being held on sex trafficking charges. This is the administration that claims to be so concerned about sex trafficking and the abuse of children. They got those two guys out of Romania. No problem. So please don't tell me that you can't do something to intervene in this situation that is of your own making.
Absolutely. That's the key point, right? You caused this. You put this in motion. Now you need to fix it. That too is what government should do, right? Good government protecting us and keeping us safe and secure. Secondarily, we all saw once again the recent visit of the El Salvadoran president in the Oval Office sitting there. All that needs to happen, the Secretary of State is right there. The Attorney General is right there. You turn to him, maybe not on camera, and you say, you know what? We're sending a C-130 down to your country.
Yep.
I'm sure they'll get air flight coverage in, and we'd like to have Mr. Abrego Garcia back by virtue of our diplomatic relations, by virtue of the fact that we're paying you money, right?
Yeah.
Now to house these people, we would like that done right away. And Mr. Secretary of Defense, make certain that C-130 gets wheels up, and bring him back. that needed to be done. It's not simple. I don't mean it can be done literally overnight, but pretty darn close, pretty darn close. And with a directive from the president and others, that should have happened.
Well, and you also just mentioned some other thing. We are paying El Salvador. Who Yes. appropriated this money? I thought that was Congress's responsibility to appropriate money, and now we're paying them how much?
Right, and it's got to be oversight, right? This is where, frankly, both parties should be looking at this and saying, again, another arguable violation. What do we know about this? Well, we need to find out. Let's have a committee hearing on exactly this. Let's talk about before the House Ways and Means Committee, other budget authorities, and ask them those questions.
Jim Santel, we're going to continue our conversation on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvi Tini on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Next hour at this time, we'll wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Rock the Boat, hopefully final edition. Stay tuned for that. That's coming up around 10:51 today. Right now, we are joined by our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jim Santel is here. Jim, I wanted to take our remaining time to talk a little bit about Governor Evers and some other Democrats are in hot water, essentially for explaining to immigrants what they need to do if they are confronted by ICE. And from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, these are the legal recommendations for what people are supposed to do. He's not making these up. He's not telling people to do things that are illegal, right?
Right, absolutely. And again, in your prior segment, as I was listening in, talking about air travel these days on these issues, you look to what government should do. Even our prior discussion, right, about citizens and the rights and responsibilities we have, what should government do? It should, at least at a minimum, not intrude into our lives inordinately, but should help us, right? Should help us to understand what the law is. The governor, I would offer that every public official has an educational responsibility to our population. As a part of that commitment to make us good people, better people, that's what good government's all about. And what Governor Evers here, and I know we can talk about the minutiae of this, he is, number one, not providing legal representation to them. That's someone else. He is simply stating again what the law is, what the rules and regulations are. It happens to be, yes, indeed, on this very hot button issue right now. But you think about it in other contexts, right? Governor and many agencies across the board, every single one of them publishes information, at least used to do it federally. Now it's being stripped, but at least in the state of Wisconsin, we still have a governor who provides us with information about what the law is on everything from getting a campsite in some of our parks, right, to how our Wisconsin healthcare system works. That's what we do. And that's the umbrella under which this falls. If our governor, and again, I get the political animus here, I get that, but let's label it as just that. And let's applaud, again, on any side of the political aisle, somebody who steps forward and says, this is what the expectations are, this is what the rules are for life and living in Wisconsin, whether it's the governor or your local alderman or your school board member, about enrolling your students in the school of your choice here. all of that a part of what government should do. Why are we spending all this time now and all this energy once again on this kind of crazy thing?
It just seems like every day in the news we're getting these stories, and this doesn't feel like a story. This feels like someone just doing their responsibility and they're doing their job.
In my estimation, this is about creating outrage.
Yeah.
In order to divert attention from other things, like the next thing I want to bring up in the next couple of minutes, I have seen reports this morning, Jim, there are lawyers who are doing pro bono work for immigrants. Mm. Yes. Pro bono is you are doing this for free. I have seen a couple stories this morning, and we're not going to have a lot of time to jump into this, but pro bono attorneys now are getting concerned because they're worried that the government is going to come after them.
Legitimate concern, given what this president has done. And again, kudos to my profession, which, again, I like a good lawyer joke as best as anybody does, as you know. But kudos for these lawyers, and I will say for myself as well. That I do an awful lot of pro bono work. I'm not patting myself on the back about that. But what lawyers need to do in this time is exactly that kind of thing, including representing people who, again, are indigent, do not have the means to push back, at least make their case. Again, the due process, Jane, that we talked about. Here's the other one that I've actually been on the air talking about. For those people who are now going to be targeted, again, by this administration for investigations by this president, and we know there are at least two of them already referred over there, we need to ensure that they are not financially crippled by virtue of the investigations that are undertaken. The investigation is itself the punishment. And frankly, I would look forward to the time when I could represent maybe one, maybe two of those people. There are other lawyers out there who are willing to do this. And you've just identified a particular subset of those good lawyers out there representing people who would not otherwise be represented. They're indigent. They do not have the capacity to do it. This is what we do. This is what our nation does. Good attorneys do in times of crisis.
It's like what we were talking about before at the beginning of the show regarding FEMA. Good lawyers are in it for service. To help the people, they deserve to get paid. Abraham Lincoln said, "Your advice is your stock and trade," but it is also about helping.
Right, absolutely, and that's what's going on here. There are some great programs. Obviously, I'm affiliated with some of them, as are many other attorneys throughout the state of Wisconsin who do these kinds of things routinely. Now, especially where we've got this heightened focus by our administration in Washington on immigrants. Again, it's to ensure that they've got access to the courts, right? That they've got access to that due process, and that there's a fundamental commitment beyond their cases to America that says, yes, we're going to give you this kind of representation. I'm proud to be in a nation that still does that, even if my government does not support it.
Jim Santel is host of Amicus, a law review. Check it out Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network. Thank you so very much, Jim. We will see you in a week.
Always a pleasure, Jane and Greg and Calvin. Take care.
Stay with us. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.